Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, 1 year on from Pope Benedict's visit to the United Kingdom, we look back at some of the highlights and discover how Catholics around the country are celebrating its legacy. We'll be hearing from the head of the Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, Archbishop Vincent Nicholls, and from the British government's coordinator for the papal visit, Lord Chris Patten. One year on from the historic visit of Pope Benedict XVI to Britain, Catholics around the country are marking this first anniversary with a variety of unusual and creative initiatives. From the moment the papal plane touched down in a windswept Edinburgh airport on the morning of September the 16th, the four-day visit to Scotland, London and Birmingham touched people's hearts and minds in all sorts of unexpected ways. Through his intense schedule of meetings with Britain's political and religious leaders, but especially through the masses he celebrated in Glasgow's Bella Houston Park, London's Westminster Cathedral and Birmingham's Cofton Park, or the Saturday Vigil in Hyde Park, the Pope urged all people of faith to make their voices heard and to work together for the common good, especially in service to the poorest and most vulnerable members of society.
Faith is meant to bear fruit in the transformation of our world, so the power of the Holy Spirit at work in the lives and activity of believers. No one who looks realistically at our world today could think that Christians can afford to go on with business as usual, ignoring the profound crisis of faith which has overtaken our society, or simply trusting that the patrimony of values handed down by the Christian centuries will continue to inspire and shape the future of our society. We know that in times of crisis and upheaval, God has raised up great saints and prophets for the renewal of the Church and Christian society. We trust in his providence and we pray for his continued guidance. But each of us, in accordance with his or her state of life, is called to work for the advancement of God's kingdom by imbuing temporal life with the values of the gospel. Each of us has a mission. Each of us is called to change the world, to work for a culture of life, a culture fought by love and respect for the dignity of each human person.
Well, that legacy is now being celebrated in a very public way by the bishops of England, Scotland and Wales, who are urging Catholics to get together this weekend and share their own memories of the trip. As of this Friday, the bishops are encouraging people to renew the practice of Friday penance, renouncing meat or some other food as a practical sign of their Catholic identity. On Sunday, Archbishop Vincent Nicholls, head of the Catholic Bishops' Conference in England and Wales, will be leading a mass of thanksgiving in Westminster Cathedral around the theme Fresh Wind in Our Sails, a phrase attributed to the Pope himself at the conclusion of his UK visit. So to find out more, let's listen to Archbishop Nicholls talking about this first anniversary weekend, which falls on the traditional Home Mission Sunday.
Well, the focus of this year's Home Mission Sunday is taken from a remark that was made to me by the Holy Father's personal private secretary, Monsignor George, when I asked him if the Pope was still reflecting on his visit to the United Kingdom. He said to me, "Oh yes," he said, "it's put fresh wind in his sails." And that's the theme for our Home Mission Sunday this year, which falls on the anniversary of Pope Benedict's visit to the United Kingdom on the 18th of September. Our theme is Put Fresh Wind in Our Sails. And I think this Home Mission Sunday, on the anniversary of the papal visit, is a huge opportunity for us to remember again the graces and the energy that surrounded the visit of Pope Benedict, and to take fresh encouragement from that. So we saw him in an image that sticks in my mind, in the Pope Mobile, coming down the Mall with the Union Jack and the papal flag flying side by side down the length of the Mall. That was a picture of the presence of the Church in our society. And to take that kind of part in the life of our society, we need fresh wind. We need confidence. We need a renewed wind of the Holy Spirit in our backs so that we don't look down. We don't look backwards. We face the future. We face forward, confident in the message that the Lord gives us, that the Holy Father affirmed within us. Now, that message is essentially about our search for holiness through service of Christ. And the service of Christ and the search of holiness finds an important expression in the role that we play in our everyday lives, outside of church, in our homes, in our places of work, where with confidence we put forward the vision of faith in practice. We might not say very much a lot of the time, but we put it forward in action. And when we're asked, we're ready to speak about our faith sensitively and carefully. So, fresh wind in our sails for home mission. That's our theme this September. The next steps that we take around the weekend of Home Mission Sunday, I think, are very clear. On the Friday of the Home Mission weekend, that's the 16th of September, we will start as a community to refresh our Friday observance of penance. This is very important because it helps to focus our lives again on the death of Christ on that Good Friday, and to share in his self-sacrifice, his self-giving, by giving a bit up of what we like for ourselves. Now, what we've asked is that Catholics together as a community, whether we're at home, in a school or wherever, we abstain from eating meat on a Friday. It's an old traditional way of expressing penance. It's always been there in the universal law of the Church. And we think this is a very opportune moment for us to refresh that act of penance ourselves together, corporately, so that we encourage one another. We share that moment, and indeed we express it in prayer, perhaps together at a meal or at some other point in the day. That will help to refocus our hearts on the work of the Lord and of our presence in society, that we are a bit distinctive. On Saturday, the 17th of September, when we remember the day that the Pope spent in central London, particularly in that wonderful vigil of prayer in Hyde Park and the Mass in Westminster Cathedral, I hope that you will find time as a family or as a group of friends or as a group of youngsters to get together to remember the stories of that weekend. Find your photographs. Have another look at the DVD. Maybe you made home recordings of episodes of the papal visit. Maybe some of you went and travelled to these events. On this anniversary Saturday, could I please ask you to delve into that memory bank and bring out those treasured memories again and enjoy them. And sit down together and have a Pope Benedict party on Saturday, the 17th of September. Sunday, the 18th of September, is the day for our more prayerful and formal remembrance, recollection of the visit, and celebration of its gifts. I hope that will be the theme of prayer in every church on Home Mission Sunday, the 18th of September, where we ask God to give us fresh wind and thank God for the memory and the gifts of the visit of Pope Benedict. In the afternoon, we bishops will all gather here in Westminster Cathedral for Mass at 3 o'clock, when we will formally thank God, formally recall the visit, formally recall the Holy Father's words to us as bishops at the end of the visit. I hope over this weekend you will dwell on some of those key themes that he called us to be. Witnesses in the good work of education, calling us to sanctity of life, to a holiness from a young age, encouraging young people to play their part in the life of the church, reminding us of the great dignity of being a priestly people called to consecrate the world to God.
Christ has need of families to remind the world of the dignity of human life and the beauty of family life. He needs men and women who devote their lives to the noble task of education, tending the young and forming them in the ways of the gospel. He needs those who will consecrate their lives to the pursuit of perfect charity, following him in chastity, poverty, and obedience, and serving him in the least of our brothers and sisters. He needs the powerful love of contemplative religious, who sustains the church's witness and activity through their constant prayer. And he needs priests, good and holy priests, men who are willing to lay down their lives for their sheep. Ask your Lord what he has in mind for you.
And of course, all the attention that he brought to the elderly, to the vulnerable, to those who have suffered abuse in our midst, and of course, to Blessed Cardinal John Henry Newman. Not long ago, for example, our Office for Evangelization put out the document called Some Definite Purpose, calling on Cardinal Newman's sense of vocation, that to every single one of us, God has given a definite purpose. And it's our task, our joy, to find that sense of purpose, God-given purpose, in our lives. Because when we find it, and when we live by it, then we experience a profound, peaceful joy within us that takes us through all the daily difficulties that we face. So there's a whole program of parish events looking back at the papal visit, exploring the themes of the Pope's words under that heading, Some Definite Purpose. So please go and have a good look for that and use it. Many parishes have been doing so, but at this time of the anniversary of the papal visit, give it a fresh start. Then, of course, there are the things that are on the shelves, the booklets with the Holy Father's homilies and addresses in it. So those texts are rich, and we ought not to ignore them or forget them. They stand the test of time, so I invite you to go back and read those again. Talk with them, with your friends, within your family, within small groups, and see how even now, at a year's distance, they can refresh in us our sense of mission. And then there's the DVD and the other things that will be your means of remembering this visit. So study, prayer, joyful remembrance of the events of the visit. All of these things you'll find help and support. So let's do that and make this Home Mission Sunday, this anniversary of the Holy Father's visit, really very special.
Archbishop Vincent Nichols, who will be leading a Mass of Thanksgiving on this first anniversary of the papal visit on Sunday afternoon in Westminster Cathedral. So plenty to celebrate 1 year on. But if you remember back to the days and weeks before the Pope's arrival in Edinburgh, it hadn't always seemed plain sailing, with protests planned and much of the media questioning what kind of welcome he might receive in such a multicultural and increasingly secular context. As the British government's coordinator for the papal visit, Lord Chris Patten was amongst those in the front line, dealing with all the logistical and organisational headaches ahead of that trip. Not long after it was all over, I caught up with him here in Rome to hear his impressions. We talked about the reasons for its success, about his own favourite memories, and about the serious debate he hopes it will continue to generate within British society for many years to come.
I think pretty well every visit His Holiness has made has been preceded by rather sceptical commentary on how it's going to go, and then it's proved to be very successful. I was in the United States when he went there, and the visit was a huge triumph. I think the reasons for the success were principally threefold. First of all, His Holiness himself. I mean, a lot of the commentary has rather slid past the point that this was a hugely tiring, demanding program, which he managed with great elan, in a language with which, to no criticism, he's not comfortable. And to have done it all as wonderfully well as he did is a great tribute to him personally. Secondly, it was in a sense a stick in the eye for metropolitan cynicism. What made the trip a success from the very beginning was the turnout of the crowds, Catholic and non-Catholic alike, who wanted to wish him well. And for some of us, the most wonderful sight was not just the social mix of worshippers at the masses and the vigil, but the young kids. I mean, very normal teenagers with funny T-shirts and banners and enjoying themselves. The organisers of the event in Hyde Park had expected it to be like the normal proms in the park, a sort of concert, a classical concert, you know, and rather staid and middle class. They were amazed when it turned into something like a pop concert. But even so, at moments, there was complete silence during the vigil. So that was one of the reasons for the success. Thirdly, I think not just the messenger and the people to whom the message was delivered, but the message itself. Thoughtful, quite challenging, but I can't remember a recent visit by any world figure which has left behind so much debate about really serious issues. So I think from our point of view, as the Prime Minister made clear when Pope Benedict was leaving Birmingham, I think it was a huge success.
As you say, it was indeed an action-packed 4 days, a very intense programme. What perhaps were your personal highlights?
I most enjoyed the Friday and Saturday morning. First of all, the speech in Westminster Hall, which is a building which is iconic, really, in British history. The building where Thomas More, said to be the patron saint of politicians, because he's a man of conscience. Unfortunately, none of politicians perhaps are. But an iconic building in British history, and the Pope made this very, very interesting speech about the relationship between faith and reason and the rule of law in a moderate, tolerant society. Then we went across the road, as it were, for the great ecumenical service in Westminster Abbey. And I will never forget, I'm married to a member of the Church of England, and for her it was, and for both of us, it was a moment of great joy when the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Pope entered that wonderful medieval building to the sound of the Church's one foundation. It was Church of England liturgy at its finest. And then the following morning, we had that wonderful Mass in Westminster Cathedral with a great piece of music to open it by James McMillan, the Scottish composer, Tuas Petrus, which took the roof off the cathedral. There were a lot of very good moments as well, but those for me were the highlights.
As you said, the Pope left behind some quite challenging questions, didn't he? If you had to suggest perhaps what might be the longer-term impact of the visit, what would you like to see coming out of it?
I'd like to see members of faith groups, first of all, recognising the wisdom of what the chief rabbi said. One of the characteristics of the visit was the very fine speeches which it elicited from others, and in particular, the chief rabbi and the Archbishop of Canterbury made some extraordinarily good speeches. And the chief rabbi noted that one of the things that put people off faith was the difficulty that faith groups had over the years in working together and not fighting one another. It was put much more elegantly than that. So I think first of all, faith groups, I hope, will recognise what they have in common. And we're really talking principally about, not entirely, but principally about groups which have their paternity in Abraham. Secondly, I hope that it will make people who belong to faith groups more self-confident about saying so. And I hope we'll end some of the, these things may be exaggerated sometime, but these sort of ridiculous ways in which alleged political correctness has led to the siege of people who belong to faith groups. You know, that ridiculous and rather awful business a few years ago when an employee of British Airways was stopped from wearing a crucifix. I also hope that it will encourage secularists to be serious rather than abusive. It was, for me, rather a disappointment to see people who are serious, or said to be serious, professors and lawyers getting involved in the most abusive commentary. I mean, not many of them, but a few, about the Catholic Church and about religion in general. And I hope that they will recognise that there's actually a serious debate to be had, that the Pope and the Catholic Church want to get in a serious debate, not a debate in which the Catholic Church says it wants to run everything, but a debate in which people who do belong to faith groups say, look, you know, we have a contribution to make to creating ethical foundations for politics and policymaking. So I hope those things will result from the visit.
So really raising the tone, perhaps, of the debate between faith and reason. It's an optimistic a hope.
Yes, it is a bit optimistic because we are said to live in a world of 24-hour news cycles, of sound bites. Well, we shouldn't allow that to crimp and confine intelligent discussion and debate. One of my favourite remarks by a politician was Adlai Stevenson's observation that the average man and woman is a great deal better than the average. And it's nice to hear people like the Archbishop of Canterbury and His Holiness and the Chief Rabbi acting on that. I wish a few more politicians would.
What about reactions from within the Catholic community there in Britain? Certainly the Pope was appealing for a much more vibrant debate between faith and reason, and it seemed that people in Britain were listening to what he had to say. Do you think the other way round is also true? Do you think, in a sense, the Pope was able to hear the very distinctive voice of the Catholic Church in Britain today?
I very much hope so. I hope that he will have been as impressed as I was by the sign of the vitality of the Catholic Church and a point I made earlier, its enormous range. You look at those queues of people going up for communion, every age, every social class, every colour, every race, an extraordinary social mix and a great deal of joy about the way people were celebrating their religion. Joy, even in the soggiest circumstances before the Mass in Birmingham. And being reminded on that occasion of one of the greatest of England's Catholics. It started so magnificently in Edinburgh and that great park in Glasgow with the cheering crowds and the yellow and white flags alongside the blue and white crosses of St. Andrew. It started wonderfully well there, and I hope that from that moment on, His Holiness and his colleagues from the Vatican will have been impressed by what they saw of the vitality of English and Scottish Catholicism.
There are those within the Catholic Church in Britain who are very keen to engage in this debate, and yet somehow, perhaps women particularly, feel that their voices aren't heard here in the Vatican.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I want to avoid turning myself into a commentator on the precise state of the Catholic Church. There are people who feel very passionately about issues like gender, the role of women in the church, a church which wouldn't exist had it not been for the way women behaved on Good Friday and when all the men ran away. There are people who are very worried about attitudes to gays in the church. I mean, I've always assumed myself that there are a lot of devout gays in the Catholic Church and that God must love them particularly strongly because of the extent of discrimination that they've felt over the years, not least in the past from parts of the Catholic Church itself. So all those issues, of course, get discussed, and I hope are discussed in a way which doesn't open divisions within the church itself and in a way which doesn't ever take away from our fundamental agreement about the most important aspect of our religion being the resurrection.
It was especially moving to celebrate with them here in Birmingham the beatification of a great son of England, Cardinal John Henry Newman. With his vast legacy of scholarly and spiritual writings, I am certain that he still has much to teach us about Christian living and witness amidst the challenges of today's world, challenges which he foresaw with such remarkable clarity. As I take my leave of you, let me assure you once again of my good wishes and prayers for the peace and prosperity of Great Britain. Thank you very much, and God bless you all.
Benedict XVI there concluding his four-day visit to the United Kingdom at Birmingham's International Airport last September, following the beatification mass for Cardinal John Henry Newman. And earlier you heard the British government coordinator for the papal visit, Lord Chris Patten. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, on this edition of our English feature programme. Be sure to join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can. Or don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.